Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The majority of the population, this is the first time that after the presidential election in Togo, everything is calm. There's no violence, there's no resistance on the street, everything looks normal.
That's VOA's Irene Hwangbo, who is on the ground in Togo on the aftermath of Saturday's presidential election. Also, more than 100 youth protested outside the French embassy in Cameroon's capital to protest comments by French President Emmanuel Macron. The head of Libya's internationally recognized government has criticized the international community for not supporting them, and Rwanda and Uganda appear to be smoothing over a rift between them. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's a lot more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Togo's president, Faure Gnassingbé, declared an electoral victory on Monday and called on his rivals to drop a competing claim, with official preliminary results showing him re-elected in a landslide. The win, if confirmed, will give Gnassingbé a fourth five-year term and extend a family dynasty that began when his father took power in a 1967 coup. But some Togolese worry that a contested outcome could lead to political violence. Preliminary figures released by the Electoral Commission showed Gnassingbé winning with 72% of the vote, with his main opponent, former Prime Minister Gabriel Massan Agbayome Kodjo, at 18%. Longtime opposition leader Jean-Pierre Fabre received just 4%. Final results are expected in the coming days. Kodjo said before the results were announced that his camp's tallies showed him winning around 60% of the vote. The president dismissed any such claim as fiction and told his rivals to accept the official result. VOA's Irene Hwangbo is on the ground in Togo. He spoke to me earlier today and first explained Kodjo's claims.
Mr. Guillaume Kodjo, a former minister and head of the National Assembly, accused the authority of setting up a fake polling station in Saturday election, bailout stuffing, and getting people to cast multiple votes in Mr. Gnassingbé's favor. Troops surrounded Mr. Kodjo's home for around 3 hours. After voting finished on Saturday. Agbayome think that it is kind of some intimidation coming from the government. But Togolese security minister called Yaka Dameham told us that it's just to protect Mr. Agbayome because there were an allegation that he is going to be addressed.
But questions remain about turnout and observer missions.
Based on the observer report that they all are submitting at this moment, everything went smoothly except the claim that Mr. Agbayome Kodjo is showing. But the population, the majority of the population, this is the first time that after the presidential election in Togo, everything is calm. There's no violence, there's no resistance on the street, everything looks normal. So I met some Togolese this morning. They only say that they are tired of fighting of those politicians who just don't care about their life. They're not going to die for anyone. And they were expecting the result to be released today, but the Electoral Commission chose to release them instead yesterday, which is look rare for most of the Togolese. So they obviously think that the action will not change anything from what the Electoral Commission or either the government or even the opposition wanted to do.
If I'm understanding you correctly, that sounds like the citizens, maybe they don't agree with what's happening, but they're just too tired and they don't think that they can actually change it.
Correct. People in Togo just don't care about what politician might be fighting for anymore. They think that they cannot change anything. Those who went to the poll station and cast the vote we're waiting for the result. And if they are not protesting today, that means maybe they agree with the result of the election. Those who didn't go to the poll station were not expecting anything. Some say that they already knew that the president elected be the one who will be elected, so there's no any other option than to be calm and face their regular everyday life and move on.
What was turnout like? Was there a strong turnout, or did most people stay at home and choose not to vote?
It was not too crowded. The participation is around 76%, according to the Electoral Commission. But on Saturday, where we were on the field, it was not that crowded.
Last week, there was a canceling of a large national domestic observer mission of civil society. What happens with that? Were they allowed to observe, or were they prevented from observing the election?
They haven't been allowed to observe the election, and my Metropol request to find out what happened to them failed.
Has there been any reaction to that from the international observer missions when this important domestic observer mission has been essentially blocked from doing its work?
They couldn't even sort it out. I asked the chief of AU delegation, who told me personally that this is a national issue. We don't want to get involved into it. We are here just to observe the election.
That was VOA's Irene Huangbo in Lomé, Togo. Cameroon is protesting criticism from French President Emmanuel Macron over how the Central African state is handling the conflict in its English-speaking regions. On Monday, over 100 youth rallied at the French embassy, demanding Macron apologize. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
More than 100, mainly young people, rallied in front of the French embassy in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, on Monday, demanding an apology from the French president. 30-year-old teacher Alex Ndoumbé says they are not happy with Emmanuel Macron's criticism of human rights in Cameroon and President Paul Biya's handling of Anglophone rebels.
We are protesting against what President Macron said concerning our country. And mostly, a president of his caliber, he was not supposed to speak like that against a respectful country like Cameroon. A country which fought for its independence since 1960. What we want from Macron is to ask for forgiveness to the president of the country and also to the entire nation of Cameroon. Sleep here, because we want him to ask us for forgiveness immediately.
The protesters denied accusations they were organized or paid by Cameroon's government. Macron in Paris on Saturday described the human rights situation in Cameroon as intolerable. He was responding to a Cameroonian activist's question about 22 civilians killed this month in the separatist conflict. Witnesses said masked gunmen in military uniforms on February 14 launched a raid on a village, killing women and children. Cameroon's army denied targeting civilians and said it was fighting rebels when a woman and four children were killed by a fire in a rebel hideout. Cameroon's government spokesperson, René Emmanuel Sadi, in a press release, condemned both the activist and Macron for what he called gross exaggerations and misleading words on the human rights situation. But Biya's critics agree with Macron and note human rights violations have plagued both sides in Cameroon's separatist conflict. Prince Michael Nguesse Ekosso is chairperson of the opposition Cameroon Socialist Democratic Party.
I support President Macron. There is a lot of human rights abuses, especially with regards to the Anglophone crisis.
University of Yaoundé international relations expert Elvis Ngolengole says Biya and Macron should talk so they can smooth over relations.
Because of Cameroon's geostrategic position, I think France has a lot to benefit by keeping relations between herself and Cameroon.
Cameroon's army has been fighting rebels since 2017 who want to create a breakaway English-speaking state called Ambazonia. Macron said he planned to call Biya this week and put maximum pressure on him to solve the conflict, which has so far left about 3,000 people dead and tens of thousands displaced. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The head of Libya's internationally recognized government has criticized the international community for not supporting the Libyan people and the Government of National Accord, who are under attack by rebel forces. He spoke at the opening of the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva, from where Lisa Schlein has this report for VOA.
The president of the Presidency Council of the Government of National Accord of Libya, Fayez Mustafa Sarraj, quickly departed from diplomatic niceties to complain about the lack of UN and international support for his beleaguered government. He condemned the assault on the capital Tripoli by rebel commander Khalifa Haftar, whom he branded a war criminal. He said Haftar's military offensive, which began April 2019, has killed thousands of people and displaced hundreds of thousands. Sarraj said civilians, airports, hospitals, and infrastructure have been targeted. He spoke through an interpreter.
Children have lost their right to education due to the shelling and the closure of schools because of the attacker and those who fund the attacker and provide weapons to them. These must be held accountable.
The United Arab Emirates, Russia, and Egypt back Haftar's forces, while the Government of National Accord is supported by Turkey. These nations have been supplying their respective sides with thousands of weapons in defiance of a UN arms embargo. A second round of UN-brokered peace talks aimed at achieving a permanent ceasefire between Libya's warring parties ended inconclusively Monday. This after less than a week of on-again, off-again turbulent meetings. In announcing the end of the round, the UN mediator said the two parties had prepared a draft ceasefire agreement and would resume discussions next month. Sarraj expressed disappointment that the UN has ignored his government's requests to establish commissions of inquiries to monitor the alleged violations of forced displacement, arbitrary detention, and extrajudicial killings committed by Haftar's forces.
And we have requested additional technical assistance in order to implement national and international laws, as well as to fight impunity and implement mechanisms of accountability.
The Libyan president reminded the UN and international community of the commitments and responsibilities they made to support the Libyan people after approving the 2015 UN Security Council resolution that established the Government of National Accord. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Amnesty International is calling for an independent, impartial, and thorough investigation into the death of Rwandan gospel singer Kizito Mihigo in a prison cell. VOA's Solomon Solomon has the story.
Amnesty International is calling for an investigation after a well-known Rwandan gospel singer was found dead in a prison cell. Kizito Mihigo reportedly died by suicide 4 days after being arrested near the border with Burundi. In a statement, the police spokesperson Eric Cabera said 3 days after Mihigo's arrest, they were investigating why he was crossing the border illegally and cases of bribery. Mihigo was a politically active artist who, although once celebrated by the Rwanda government, had fallen out of favor and had been accused of collaborating with extremists. According to the government, he was arrested while trying to cross the border to Burundi, where he intended to join an extremist group. Mihigo's friends dispute this account, saying the singer had never planned to join an armed group, but may have been leaving the country with an intention to return to Belgium, where he once lived, according to published reports. Muleya Mwananyanda of Amnesty International said the public deserves to hear more facts about this case.
Amnesty International is calling for an independent, impartial and thorough investigation into his death. We would like to know what the circumstances surrounding it and the treatment during his detention was.
She commended the government for opening an investigation, but said authorities should not prejudge the outcome by declaring it suicide. Mihigo gained fame as a proponent of reconciliation between ethnic Hutus and Tutsis in Rwanda. He spoke of his own experience losing his father during the 1994 Rwandan genocide and founded the Kizito Mihigo Peace Foundation to use art as a healing tool. He was one of several artists who helped compose Rwanda's national anthem. But he ran afoul of authorities after recording a song in 2014 titled The Meaning of Death, which was interpreted as criticizing the government of Rwandan President Paul Kagame and questioning the government's version of the genocide. Mahigo was arrested days after the song was released and later convicted of conspiracy to commit murder, complicity in a terrorist attack, and conspiracy against the government. He remained in prison until 2018, when he was released along with many other prisoners by presidential pardon. The Rwandan police said, prior to his death, he was very quiet and exhibited signs of depression. But Mwananyanda said, even if the death is ruled a suicide, important questions must be asked.
What have the Rwandan authorities done to ensure that such things are prevented in the future? Are there any safeguards in place, for example, that show that somebody is about to commit suicide and so are put on suicide watch? We're asking those questions.
She also noted with concern that other Rwandan opposition figures or enemies of the ruling party have either died in detention or under suspicious circumstances.
This worries us a lot because in the context of severe repression of any form of dissent, there have been so many arrests, convictions and harassment, suspicious killings and disappearances. This creates huge pressure on people to behave themselves, but also creates a fear society around the country.
Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington, and at 22 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Togo's incumbent president is claiming a landslide election victory. More than 100 youth protested outside the French embassy in Cameroon's capital to protest comments by French President Macron. And Rwanda and Uganda appear to be smoothing over the rift between them. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Uganda and Rwanda have signed an extradition treaty to handle cases of subversive activities practiced by each other's country's nationals in their neighbor's territory. Rwanda has also agreed to open its border with Uganda in 15 days if conditions are met. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
During the fourth summit between Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni, Rwanda's Paul Kagame, Angola's Joao Manuel Lourenco, and DRC's Felix Tshisekedi, Uganda has been given 1 month to investigate the presence of forces hostile to Rwanda's government within its territory as a condition for reopening the Rwanda-Uganda border at Katuna, in the next 15 days. This is according to a joint communique read by Manuelo Augusto, Angola's Minister of Foreign Affairs.
If these allegations are proved, the Ugandan government will take all measures to stop it and prevent it from happening again. Once this recommendation is fulfilled and reported to the heads of states, the facilitators will convene in Katuna for the solemn reopening of borders and subsequent normalization of the relations between the two countries.
The heads of state noted that some progress has been made towards normalizing relations between Rwanda and Uganda, which once were close but have fallen into disarray.
The head of state noted that since their last meeting, progress was registered regarding the commitment of the two parties to do everything they can to eliminate the tension factors. In this regard, the release of prisoners from both sides and the guarantee to continue this process in observance of the rule of law and the international humanitarian law were welcomed.
Strained relations between Rwanda and Uganda led to the closure of the border a year ago. Rwanda also barred its nationals from crossing to Uganda, accusing its neighbor of jailing Rwandans and holding them incommunicado. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Now we head to Zimbabwe, where members of the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change Alliance staged a protest march in Harare amid speculation that it could be the start of what the opposition party's leader, Nelson Chamisa, earlier forecast would be a year of action. Eddie Gondo gives us more on the story.
The party charges that government has constricted democratic space by banning its planned demonstrations under the new Maintenance of Peace and Order Act, MOPA. Critics say the legislation makes it cumbersome for citizens to protest and gives wide discretion to police to forbid any protest action, even if organizers follow procedure. The MDC Alliance has complained about police refusal to sanction their protests. Political analyst Thomas Stolle believes the situation is now untenable.
So any time we might really wake up to headlines to that effect, that people have taken to the streets, but also we are facing a brutal regime that does not take kindly to citizens expressing their rights in the form of protests. It's a catch-22 situation.
Stolle believes that Zimbabwe, with 90% unemployment, is an increasingly restive populace which is facing extreme hardship. Had a seat are those under age 25, who the United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA, say make up 62% of the population. MDC is what Stolle calls a youth dividend, which is jobless and growing impatient with government's economic mismanagement and self-admitted corruption. MDC's provincial spokesman, Fanny Mnengami, speaks about the protest action, which was short and yielded no arrests.
It was just a prompt demonstration by people of Harare, and it's obvious most of the people in Harare, they are MDC members, but it wasn't like an MDC thing, although our members participated. The issues, they were economic issues, that reforms.
Nengami says other issues include corruption. He said pressure on his party for action is rising since the recent monetary policy statement offered no tangible solutions for the spiraling economy and devaluation of the local currency.
It was just spontaneous, but you never know with it, that is what I can say. The mood is very tense at the moment. And I want to be honest, people are not happy. It's really tense, especially after the monetary policy which was issued by Manguri.
Ngami says the economic situation has become unbearable.
In fact, as a party, we are actually under pressure to do some sort of action as I speak right now. As a party, we are very much committed to dialogue, but obviously not through policy.
Observers say the economic downturn is linked to political gridlock, which has dampened public confidence in the government. Various groups have been trying to bring the two major political parties to the table. MDC refuses to join what it calls the government-directed political actors dialogue, POLAD. Mnengami explains.
The biggest problem with the POLAD platform is that POLAD is an extension of ZANU-PF. I think you have seen what they've been doing, you've seen what they've been saying. That is number one. Number two, POLAD, they don't have the mandate of the electorate. At the end of the day, you cannot just Mnangagwa being the rest, so we need a neutral arbitrate.
Chamisa has pledged that his party will not sit back and watch the country descend further. Political analyst Thomas Stolle believes MDC needs to step up.
Something really has to give. The situation right now is ready for a nationwide protest strike, but only if well-coordinated.
Government maintains that its reforms are on course to deliver change. Observers say it lacks the political will to effect real change. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer Dan Brown and our engineer PJ Elliott, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello. Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.